This is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction Show. Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Beasley here with my wife, Louise, my sister-in-law, Yuana, and my brother, Mark, on this Thursday, March 5th, 2015, continuing our ongoing conversation about being addicted to fear, something we started last week to talk about in some serious detail. And there was so much to talk about, we figured we would talk about it this week. I guess that really proves, Yuana, that there's plenty of fear to go around.
I guess so. Yes, and unfortunately, I'm giving away my shares.
I'm sure there are plenty of people willing to take it on from you.
I know, exactly.
That's almost a depressing thought, so I won't go there.
It is depressing.
But, along the lines of dealing with addiction to fear, one thing that Louise and I tried today, actually, for the first time, was a new approach to dealing with it. Because obviously, if you're feeling fear a significant portion of the time, that's essentially the message, the thought, the vibration, or whatever you want to call it, heading into your vortex, as Abraham Hicks calls it. That basically, it's what you're attracting. It's what you're putting out for the law of attraction to send back to you. So you're going to get more and more reasons to be afraid, which, of course, is why we wanted to talk about it. So toward that end, I'd been thinking about how do you turn that around? And we kind of touched on some ideas last week, but I was looking for something that I could do more specifically in a more organized way. And by that, I mean I was kind of taking a cue, if you will, from the world of religion. And you guys know that while I certainly have respect for any religion that practices and believes in the law of attraction, my own views are not terribly religiously oriented. So anything that is, shall we say, smacks of organized religion, I tend to shy away from. One of those things I tend to shy away from is the word prayer. Now, I have no problem with the idea of putting out, you know, what you're trying to attract, your intentions or whatever. And I recognize that's very, very similar to prayer. But I just have a desire to change it up so that I don't think of it as prayer. That makes me feel better. So I was thinking about what could I call it? And the idea of calling it intending or putting out intentions, that seemed to be a pretty good way to do it. So I also decided, well, why not come up with something similar to what churches have? Churches often have various forms of organized prayer. Christian churches, for instance, they have the various creeds, they have the Lord's Prayer, they have, you know, that kind of thing. So why not come up with an alternative that's not really that's going to fit more of what my own tastes are, where this whole subject is concerned, that can be done in a group setting.
Right.
So toward that end, Louise and I tried an experiment today, starting with an outline that I came up with. And the outline runs roughly like this. You start off by getting yourself into a very positive feeling state, which, of course, we know is very important to whatever it is you want to attract. If you want to attract it, you got to be in a good positive state. So we started off by just thinking about and talking about together people and pets and you know, things and so forth that are very important to us, that we love in our life, and focusing specifically on just talking about that. And just that alone started to get us feeling really happy. I was, as we were talking about the people who are really close to us and how we felt about them, I just felt this glow feeling, my chest and my heart, my head, and so on and so forth. So I knew we were on the right track. And then after we'd done that for a while, we branched out to other things that were important to us in our lives, and just did this for about 20 minutes, just going back and forth, each of us coming up with something that, you know, would come to our mind about what it is that makes us feel good in life, makes us feel positive, with the goal of building up our energy and building up our positive vibration. And then once we did that, and actually there was a step we took before this. The step we took before this is we wrote down what we wanted to put out as our requests, if you will. Typically, prayers have some sort of request. Well, for an intention, we also need to have a set of requests. So we wrote them down in advance. And then once we got our vibration level up through this activity I just described, then in that heightened state of positivity, then we started thinking about the things that we wanted to attract, knowing that that's the best state to be in when you want to attract something. Mm-hmm. We each had four or five items on a list, and we went through those one at a time, making sure that we spent at least a minute or two on it, because you want to stay in that zone for you know, a significant amount of time in order to really put the universe to work for you. And then once we'd gone through all of that, we'd been on this for about a half an hour. At that point, we just kind of finished it up with just sort of a last rocket of happiness, if you will, sort of the spiritual equivalent of an amen or something like that. So that was the general model we followed. And I guess, like I said, to start this off, the thing that motivated me was I've been noticing quite a bit lately, particularly since our last show, just how often I can feel the fear that goes on inside me. I mean, Louise and I have had plenty going on in our life lately where there's been stuff that we've had some fear about, and it's been noticeable. And I wanted to end it. Well, after our session, I wasn't feeling afraid anymore. So I knew that we had accomplished at least that much. Now, what do we end up attracting further down the line? I don't know. You'll have to check in about a week or two from now, and we can give you a report. But for the moment, I was feeling better. So that's what I wanted to share with you guys. That's what we wanted to share with you, because we did that experiment today and had at least some very interesting initial results in the fact that we both felt quite a bit better afterward.
So this was something you did like first thing this morning?
No, we did it around noontime. We did it around noontime today.
Okay.
We had to go do something else this morning first, but we intended to do it earlier, but hey, we got to it. That wasn't the important thing.
Okay. I guess my question is really if you're going to make it like a ritual, kind of like the prayer is supposed to be mirroring or not, or...
Are you going to practice it daily?
We hadn't even gotten that far, to be honest. I mean, I think my ultimate intention is yes, to do something like that regularly. But we again, we haven't talked that far. We just wanted to try it first to see if we could do it and to see how it would feel.
Okay. So I guess it's like an evolving experiment.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We're sharing exactly what we've just started to do with very little forethought.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Well, that sounds great. Sounds exciting.
Yeah. I mean, we now that we go to church every week on Saturday. And so we kind of experienced similar things on a more organized routine kind of a way, you know, where we get to worship and sing and praise and fellowship and just be in a happy place for most of the day on Saturday.
Okay.
So, and on top of that, we've been diligently writing in our gratitude journals every morning.
You've been doing that for a while now, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, quite a few weeks.
Which I feel so proud of, because I've tried that several times over the course of my life, and it always kind of falls off, but I'm so determined to make it a habit that I, you know, just becomes an unconscious part of my life.
What do you think made the difference this time around to make you want to continue to stay on top of it?
A combination of things. Every time I do it, I see the results, you know, I feel the happiness, I feel the joy, I feel the high energy that I get from doing it. The other thing is that Mark has finally joined me in the habit, too. And also, Rihanna is also doing it. So now I have an additional incentive, as it were, to, you know, if I'm going to, you know, encourage people to do this, then I have to do it myself.
Yeah, it's funny how that works, isn't it?
I know.
Yeah, you kind of set the bar, and all of a sudden you have to meet the bar.
Exactly. Yes.
I've made brief attempts at it before. This current effort, and if this is the first time really where I'm feeling like it's helping me in the morning. You know, sometimes when you wake up in the morning, sometimes when I wake up in the morning, when I just come up out of sleep, I feel a little kind of grumpy, kind of down into myself, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And but this helps bring me right out of it.
So you get an immediate, tangible benefit.
Yeah, Yeah, it's immediate, and that keeps me going, keeps me wanting to do it every morning.
Yeah, on a few occasions that I've actually written in my journal twice a day as opposed to once a day. Like, sometimes at night, you're just filled with so much gratitude and appreciation. You just want to write it down, and what that does, it helps you not just clarify what you're grateful for, but it also intensifies the feelings and the emotions associated with it, because now you have to describe it and give details, and so it just kind of amplifies the whole experience. So it's really a great thing to do.
So is there a structure to what you do?
Yeah, for me, I try to write five things that I'm grateful for every day. And, I list them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and for each item, I write about a paragraph long describing the thing that I'm grateful for, why I'm grateful for it, how it makes me feel, what I enjoy, what I like about it. And sometimes one of those five things is something that I'm looking forward to, but I go into the place of it having already happened, and I express gratitude for it already taking place. So that is also a great experience.
That's part of what we did this morning, was be grateful for what has we've already experienced, and then gratitude for what's to come.
Yeah. Yes, because like as we said, time is an illusion. So
that's right. That's right.
One that keeps tripping me up. I guess the good part, though, is that despite the fact that it trips me up, I'm finding myself more and more in a mental space where I'm realizing through little bits and pieces of information that come through my experience that time really is an illusion. I'm beginning to grasp that on an experiential basis, and that's a nice transition.
It is. When I first, after reading Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now, I had similar experiences. I've kind of gone back into the illusion that it were. I no longer experience those like I did. But I know what you're talking about.
Okay, so let's see. We were talking last week in particular about the addiction to fear, and then the second half was about how we deal with that, how we try to overcome it. I guess one thing I wanted to touch on before we get more into some of the solutions that we employ in our daily lives is, it's a question, where is each of our levels of fear these days compared to some point in the past? And you can pick what point in the past you want. In other words, how well is all this method working?
Definitely less for me. I mean, even from last year, I've noticed a dramatic difference in the reduction of my own personal fears. And I say it in the mornings, I sometimes wake up kind of, as I sit down into myself, that's really just another expression of fear. And that still happens today, but it's not as bad as it used to be. And, of course, with the practice, I kind of dispel it pretty quickly right in the morning. But overall, my days are a lot less fearful. My activities in my mind, when I'm working on business, whatever, fears trigger less often than they used to.
And what has the fear been replaced with in your experience? What's different now that the fear level is lower? What do you feel is the dominant feeling now?
It's more peaceful. I feel more peaceful. That's it. Peace, I guess.
Okay.
That's it.
Is that true for you too, Ioana?
My dominant feeling is more gratitude. It's more happy, which then allows me to actually look around and appreciate my surroundings, So the happiness comes before the gratitude. But yeah, definitely it's been a lot different from about a week or so ago when I had that that epiphany and realized that I was addicted to specifically anxiety. And so ever since then, my anxiety level just dropped, and it's been continuing to drop. But I did notice a couple of times last week that, you know, something would happen or a thought would come to my mind about something, and I would almost, you know, out of habit, want to have that anxiety response. And then I would tell myself, wait a minute, ah, that's not me anymore. I don't do anxiety anymore, you know. And then I was like, okay. But, you know, you have to be vigilant because, you know, if you've been doing something all your life, it's very easy to go back into that routine. You know, we have the patterns have been established over years in your brain and in your psyche. And so I realized how easy it would have been to just kind of slip back into that, even though I know what I know now. But, yeah, so more and more I'm breaking that habit and replacing it with a different habit. And, you know, the more that my anxiety decreases, it, you know, I almost have a visceral feeling of being able to breathe.
Wow.
I didn't realize my anxiety was, like, causing me, what's the term for shortness of breath?
Hyperventilation.
Yeah, hyperventilation. And now I can breathe. And that's both on a physical level as well as on an emotional level. Now I can really breathe and, like, look around, enjoy my life, enjoy the people I'm with, enjoy my experiences a whole lot more than I was before.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, virtually every meditational technique on earth uses deep breathing as a primary foundation for what gets done.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So to find yourself in a state where you are more normally, more naturally breathing deeply, that makes a lot of sense. Take the fear away and you're going to breathe better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking about it. I just realized that based on my training, you know, in neuroscience and biology, that, you know, the connection between the brain and the body, specifically the brain and the heart, there's a nerve, the vagus nerve that runs from, you know, to the heart and controls heart rate. And most of the time we spend our lives in this high anxiety mode, and so our heart is under a lot of stress under those conditions. And there are certain techniques that can relieve that. Of course, like you were saying, breathing and yoga and massage and all these relaxation techniques actually directly affect the activity of the heart and the vagus nerve, so much so that doctors are now recommending patients who have various heart conditions to adopt these practices, either in addition to their medication or as an alternative to their medication, because it definitely, the research has shown that it does help relieve the stress and the pressure on the heart, and as a result, the heart is able to perform a whole lot better in terms of causing blood flow throughout the body, and with that, bring more oxygen to yourself.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, if you're going to be breathing better, you're going to have better respiration. Your heart obviously is involved in respiration, so it makes total sense.
Yeah.
You also mentioned something that caught my attention. I think you kind of mentioned it in passing, but you pointed out that since you, in a sense, announced to the world this thing that you have with anxiety, your anxiety levels dropped and you began to notice stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've been noticing much the same kind of thing, that since we went through that exercise last show, I've been noticing a lot more often when I'm starting to trigger myself into a negative place. I'm noticing where and when I'm doing it a lot more. And it's actually heightened my awareness.
Yeah.
So yeah, I found that to be quite significant.
It is. In fact, you know, Deepak Chopra, he's written extensively about this, and he's an avid proponent of meditation, specifically, I think it's transcendental meditation, but he always says in all of his writings that the point of power is awareness. He says if he has nothing else but the awareness, he can control his world, his life, his universe. Well, and now that's
it's nice to know where the awareness comes from now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right, because, you know, reading it and experiencing it is two different things. But yeah, I definitely
understand. Otherwise, it's too random. When it comes from a definite source and you know how to set yourself into being able to notice when the trigger is going to take place, that's a big difference from just sitting there saying, okay, what do I do next?
Right, yeah, definitely.
Okay, so I think we've. Is there any other revelations anyone has to share about their own particular fears that have come to them in the last week before we move on to the next step?
I'd just like to add, I woke up one morning this past week realizing how fear has crept or still creeps into my subconscious, in that I woke up with. I find to be a funny dream, but a telling dream. I must have been in a kitchen with a what's called a stand mixer instead of a hand mixer that you sits on the counter and you just turn it on, you take your hands off it. Well, I was whipping cream, and the cream was getting so big and starting to come out of the bowl, and I couldn't reach the controls to turn it off, and I'm trying to and feeling out of control and that things were going to spill over. And I definitely took that as a metaphor for feeling overwhelmed and that I feel quite a few things out of my control. But coming awake, realized that that doesn't have to be my state of being, that I can take control over what is within my to take control over. And that my fear and anxiety doesn't last as long. I mean, I've had times where I can feel it in my chest. You want to, like you were talking about, almost like the hyperventilating, almost a pain because I'm not breathing deeply enough.
Right.
Or, it's not, and I'm constricting my muscles to just letting that go. You know, it's like, okay, enough. You know, breathe and focus on what you have to get done today. And that's all I can do is what needs to be dealt with today, put out the intentions for the future, and do the things that help foster positive feelings and positive physiology, I guess you would say, within myself. And Walt and I, for about a week and a half, we're successful in trying to do some exercise, be it yoga, Zumba, or some ab work. We did it for 4 or 5 days with a break or two in between and haven't done it in several days and trying to find ways to make that something we look forward to, not that it's a task that, you know, we dread and has to be done, that we want to do it because we feel better and it's fun to do. And we've talked a little bit about maybe how to tweak it a little bit to make it more enjoyable for ourselves.
Yeah.
And just an aside, I think both times we get down on the floor and did the yoga, both the cats came from wherever they were, probably taking their naps, and joined us on the floor.
Yeah.
And if we did stretching exercises, they did stretching exercises too.
Right. Cats are such good examples of that. They practice yoga regularly. It's part of why they're so calm and live so long. But two things I wanted to point out what you were saying. You know, you're talking about the exercise and trying to make that a habit, and as you were saying, you did it for 4 days and then you kind of didn't, and it just reminded me of my thing of giving up the anxiety and how easy it was to go back there, even though I was aware that anxiety was not my, you know, not a productive state anymore, and I refused to claim it, but it was so easy to go back to that habit. And it's the same thing with exercise. You've been not exercising, and that's been your habit, and now trying to change that, you know, it's becoming such a, it's a challenge to make those changes. And I'm always reminded of the example that was given about, you know, water flowing down a mountainside or a hillside and forming a groove, and you trying to change that habit, it's like making a new groove, but of course the old groove is going to be a lot deeper and, you know, more established and so much easier for the water to flow that down that groove. But trying to get the water to flow down a shallow, new, not well-developed groove is so much more challenging. And so you have to force the water to flow, and you also have to stop, you know, kind of block up the old groove so that the water doesn't have a path there anymore. And that's part of what making those changes are about. But the second thing I wanted to talk about, was that the third? I was reminded of this movie starring Will Smith and his son. Now, the movie got really bad reviews because it's just Will Smith and his son, the entire movie. But there is such a powerful message in that movie. He was, he was this great galactic being, and for some reason he got injured, and his son, who is now his protege, has to go and save the planet, basically. And he could communicate with him, so he was stationed on some spaceship, and the son could go out. And he's communicating with him, and the son is encountering all these monsters and very treacherous experiences. And he's trying to teach him that fear is not real. And one of the things he tells him is that fear and awareness cannot coexist. If you are afraid, then you're not aware. Once you become aware, you can no longer be afraid. And he specifically tells him that to overcome your fear, you have to deliberately become aware of your surroundings. And he walks him through this several times. Like, when you're afraid, get present, be aware. So what are you seeing? What are you smelling? What are you tasting? What can you touch? And use all of his senses, basically, to become aware of his circumstances. And once he does that, then he can no longer be afraid. And in the movie, the monster basically is repelled or destroyed. Or once he's not afraid, the monster cannot see him anymore. He becomes invisible. Yeah. It's sci-fi, but I thought the premise of the movie was such a great one, because I, after watching that movie, I did try to practice that several times. When I would become afraid, I would try to then switch into awareness mode and then just become aware of my surroundings. And I realized that what he said, when fear and awareness, they really cannot coexist.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was good.
Years ago, one of my counseling clients defined the word fear, and I loved it. And what is it called when each letter is
an
acronym? She said, fear is false evidence appearing real. And I'm like, that is so true. If you are, if you come present, and like you said, use all your senses to what is actually happening right in this moment. And unless there's a bear sitting in front of you, or, you know, it's a matter of life and death, the fear is not real. It's something have imagined.
Exactly.
Well, let's hold that thought for a moment, because we're due to take a break. Then after the break, let's start going into some of the other methods we use to overcome fear, and how our audience can also use the same methods as well.
Clap along if you feel like a room.
Welcome back to LOA Today. Walt, Louise, Ioana, and Mark on this Thursday, March 5th, 2015, talking about being addicted to fear and the different methods we've been using and developing over the past week or two to overcome fear. In fact, Louise, you gave a very nice definition of the acronym of fear and what it really stands for, of course, coming from the world of the 12-step folks. And that's probably one of the best things that that world has given us, is that acronym, because it's been used far beyond the world of 12-step groups.
Yes, it has.
I just blanked out. I was going to say something, and I have no idea what it was.
I can tell you about how I've used that technique we were just talking about before the break.
Okay.
Recently, when business worries started to overwhelm me at times, and recently, I've used that to just calm myself down by just sitting, you know, coming back to just looking around the room where I am, realizing where I am, and appreciating the things that I appreciated about where I was. And it works. It just brought me right out of it. It's really as simple as that.
You make that sound so easy, I tell you.
Well, you know, like so many other things, the solution is simple. It's not complex or convoluted or whatever. It's simple, but we get in the way and make it more difficult because it really is that simple and can become that easy once we get out of our own way.
Yeah.
Right. The challenge I had before with it was I felt like I had to keep thinking about those worries and concerns so I wouldn't overlook them and let them get worse kind of thing.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I felt like I was concentrating on them to control them. And when I realized that's what I was doing, all I had to remember was that, okay, I'm not going to forget about them. You know, they're going to remind me of themselves at the very least. All I have to do is realize that the deadline for all of these worries is not right now. So I can just step back, relax, take a minute, and just enjoy where I am. And then as the fear subsides, then I can look back at them with more objectivity and clarity without the stress and worry.
Yeah, the irony is that the more you worry about it, is the more you're actually bringing it to pass, basically.
Right. Yeah, that is both the irony and the challenge, all wrapped up into one.
Yeah, exactly. Right, because that is the challenge. Because the more you worry about it, the stronger force with which you are attracting it into your experience and your universe. And so the challenge is not to worry. And one of the things that helps me is, you know, I realize it's part of what the acronym that Louise reminded us of, that fear stands for false evidence appearing real. And I realize that when I worry about something, most of the time, if not all the time, I'm projecting the worst case scenario.
Mm.
You know, so here I am projecting only what can possibly go wrong, all the disaster, you know, everything that otherwise I wouldn't be worried, you know.
Wouldn't it be nice if instead of that, the sort of default way of thinking was, well, I could do this, and I could do that, and I could do this, and this would, all the positives, ways of, you know, resolving or overcoming, that was just what flowed naturally?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, unfortunately, we've been culturalized and trained and programmed to, you know, do the wrong thing, which is where it projects the negative. But when I remember that only makes things worse. And like you said, I realized that's all false evidence. It's not real. I have no proof of this actually happening, you know? So just as I can imagine the worst happening, I can imagine it, the best happening. And I actually do that. I actually make an effort to then run my imagination in the direction of everything working out just well, perfectly fine. And, you know, with your imagination, you can make it happen 10 times better than, you know, you even, because it's just your imagination. Although that, you know, that's a phrase that should not actually be used, because your imagination is actually very powerful.
Right.
Oh, yes.
Well, as you're talking, I'm thinking of two things that happened this past week. Within the last week or two. One was we got the bills for our cars. We lease our vehicles. And in this last bill was included the property tax. Well, we'd forgotten that we needed to think that would happen at some point, and we hadn't budgeted for that. And our budget is so small right now, it threw us for a loop. And, of course, for both of us, the anxiety and the fear came up. And then I think it was myself who said, well, wait a minute. Maybe they'll do a payment plan. Let me call the dealership, and I'll call the sales rep that we dealt with because he was really nice, and see if he can give me an answer to that. And I finally got a hold of him. And he goes, oh, yeah, we do that all the time. Not a problem. Call this number and, you know, tell them and they'll tell you just what to do. Okay. That issue was not resolved, but made far less stressful. What was the other one?
I'm not sure what you were thinking of.
I can't think of it. Somebody else go ahead, and I'll probably remember it as I'm...
Well, the thought that came to my mind as you were describing all that is we have, all of us, I think, a tendency when we're dealing with fears to, on some subconscious level, to believe that in order to combat those fears, we have to have a whip and a chair. And in fact, we don't. That's probably the biggest thing to overcome, thinking that you don't have to rise to the fight. You have to actually withdraw from the fight.
Go in a different direction.
Because you're fighting nothing.
Yeah, that's right. You're fighting nothing with nothing.
Right. I just remember what the other
now,
issue...
That is insanity. I don't know what is.
I just remember what the other issue was. Walt had done the tax forms for the women that had worked for me last year. And come to find out, he had marked the wrong box, which made them invalid. And in his looking at stuff, his anxiety came up because you can clarify if I'm speaking incorrectly, but that he had to redo something and it was going to cost money and it was, long and involved and he didn't know how to do it.
Yeah, every solution that I looked at was getting more and more expensive and more time consuming.
So he finally found a couple of possibilities, and we sat and we talked it through and what would fit our budget right now and what would be the least detrimental. And okay, that's what we'll need to do. And as we're working the positives, Walt was like, well, wait a minute, let me check one more thing. And he did. He went online and he checked something and he found out he could take care of this whole issue on the computer at no cost to us.
In about 10 minutes.
So probably a week and a half at least of anxiety was taken care of in 10 minutes. And only when we started looking at what are the viable optional solutions, what can we do, and in that processing the positive, can do, not can't do, but the can do's, Walt's mind opened up to, wait a minute, there might be another possibility. Let me look and see. And lo and behold, it was exactly what we needed at the price we wanted to pay.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, it was something that appeared at the last second as I was preparing to implement the other thing that we'd already decided we were going to have to do. It was the least unpalatable option available to us. And as I'm sitting down to do this, I'm reading the screen I have to read on the computer. And at the very bottom of that screen, it was one of the first screens I had seen at the beginning of this whole process. At the very bottom of that screen, buried, I mean literally buried in small type, was this little thing that said, here's how you can do it manually. I said, what?
Right. But both those examples actually reinforce something that we are so... It's so powerful and it's emphasized so much in neuroscience and psychology. When you are afraid and your adrenaline starts pumping, because that's what happens when you get afraid, it actually, your lizard brain, your emotional brain takes over. And that part of your brain that actually allows you to see alternative solution is shut down, like just clamped down, cannot function. And so now you are operating like, as we say, a lizard that can only think fight or flight. And that's all we think. And so we are totally closed off to any other perspective, any other alternative, any other solution. And when we do that, then, of course, the thing that we're afraid of happens. But when we are able to control the fear... And realize, okay, I have another dimension to my brain and I can actually think of a solution. I can be aware of alternatives. Then we can be able to see things a lot differently. It's almost as if when we come outside of the ego, our higher self, or God, or the universe can then communicate to us. And there are usually 1,000 other options that are available. But fear only allows us to see one, and that is we're going to die.
Yeah. Well, you're saying, and you're using of the words clamp down. Walt's actually witnessed this. With me and math, when I am confronted with something mathematical that I don't understand, my brain literally clamps shut.
Yeah.
I close off. Initially, my anxiety rises, and then I clamp and shut down, and I can't think of anything else, and all I want to do, you're saying fight or flight, I just want to get away from whatever
that
is.
Real.
And Walt has actually witnessed that in me, so he knows full, you know, he knows what that looks like in me. And you're right, it's a matter of not seeing any other options, because I was never taught how to look at that. And it was several years ago, I had what I call my math epiphany, in that I was lying in bed one night, and I think it was calculus. Somebody had something on TV about calculus, and I'm like, wait a minute. Everything from word problems in fifth or sixth grade on was in code. Algebra is code. Geometry is code. Calculus is code. Nobody ever gave me the code book. Statistics is code. Nobody ever said back in, I'm going to guess, sixth grade when we had word problems, if you see these words, that means addition. If you see these words, that means multiplication. These words mean this function. These words mean that. And if you look at algebra, those letters with numbers all are a shortened vision or example of some longer sentence.
Yeah.
But nobody ever took the time, because I'm a very right brain person, to explain it from a right brain perspective so that I could look at that and say, oh, all right, that just means blah, 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 blah. Okay, when I see that, that's what this means. Oh, okay. Now I don't want to go do calculus. But now I understand, when you see that, you know, all those formulas on a board, they're just shorthand. That's the word I want. That's just shorthand for much longer, much more complicated sentences. But nobody ever handed me the book and said, here, this is what this means.
Yeah, in fact, that principle is now being incorporated in all teacher training, education, preparing teachers. And it's because what educators now understand is that if a child is afraid or anxious or even angry, they cannot learn.
Right.
Part of their brain that is involved in learning is shut down, and its learning has now become impossible.
Yep.
And so the instead of trying all the different methods that the teachers would have tried in the past, what they need to do is to get the children to feel safe, to feel calm, and even to feel happy. And then, and only then, can they actually be open to learning and understanding anything.
I'm still trying to get over the idea that there's a lizard in my head.
Well, you know what you're talking about. Some schools have realized that kids need to play first, because that opens up the brain's receptors to learning. They need to be having fun, then bring them in for the educational piece, that the fun has to happen first. And I instinctively always knew that when parents or the daycares I worked in with the after-school program, you know, you got to do your homework first. That always raised my hackles. One, because the kids had been stuck in school all day long. They need to get out. They need to run. They need to have fun. But from an educational, scientific and educational point of view, they are going to learn better, absorb better, and retain better if they've gone and played first.
Yes, absolutely. And to reassure Walt about the lizard in his brain, the terminology, it comes from evolution. And so, you know, the lizards are the, what do you call them? The precursor of the other higher forms of animals, basically. And so they have very, very simple brains that can only do very, very simple things.
So the lizard evolved out of my brain?
We have that part. Pardon me?
I just want to know what.
Yeah, we have that brain, and on top of that, we have other layers of brain, and we have, you know, then finally the primate or the human brain that has a prefrontal cortex that, you know, that can allow us to do a whole lot more.
Hey, I don't care what that lizard's hiding behind. I want him out of there.
And I just want to know what to feed it.
The autonomic part of your system, so you need it.
The trick is to program you properly.
Yes.
Well, maybe I can just deprogram the lizard. How about that?
You'll have to evolve faster.
Oh, yes.
Well, ultimately, that's what we're trying to do, isn't it? We're trying to use positivity. We're trying to use what we've learned about how the law of attraction works in order to, among other things, reprogram our brains and basically drive the lizard out.
Exactly, yes.
And in the process, I'm hoping, I don't know what you guys think about this. One of my longstanding goals now, and it's become even more important to me lately, is to reach a point where I think you guys have actually been pretty close to this point, a point where I'm feeling very positive, very happy all the time. And when you talk about the lizard brain and so forth, that's really what made me think of the joke of driving the lizard out, because once that lizard is metaphorically gone, I think that's where I end up feeling good all the time. Am I mistaken?
Yeah, because you don't want to get rid of the lizard. You just don't want the lizard being in charge.
So you want a subordinate lizard.
Right, because the lizard has a job. The lizard's job is to keep you alive, to keep your heart rate pumping, to keep your blood flowing. It's in charge of the things that you don't think about. So,
but effectively, it probably feels like it goes away once you reach that point, because when it's no longer in charge, you're no longer inundated with negative emotions popping up at random.
Yes, when you're no longer subject to the lizard, then you know you're in good territory.
Louise is sticking her tongue out at me.
Like a lizard. And doing lizard lips.
All right, so I guess I have to live with the lizard in my head. But I'd just like to send a message to my lizard. Be quiet. Just lay there. Just do your job. Go away. Don't take over anything, because you're not welcome to do that.
Exactly. That is the key. When you start feeling the fear and anxiety, that's the lizard panicking. And so you have to say, okay, calm down. You're not in charge. I have more powerful forces, wiser, more intelligent beings that can handle this. It's okay.
Or as you said, I think last week, it's okay. I got this.
And along with that, part of that fear is the little child in us.
Exactly.
Who knows that, you know, they could die. And it's basically reassuring them, I can do this. You know, I will keep you safe. I will keep you safe. I will take care of you. You're going to be okay. Relax.
Right. That's it. Yeah.
I wanted to bring back, before the break, you asked me if I've noticed changes positively. And one of the positive changes I've noticed the past month, especially since last year, is when I do wake up in the morning, is it true that when you're sleeping, you tend to be in deeper communication with the lizard brain, or maybe letting the lizard brain kind of take over for a while or something like that? I don't know. Maybe that's not true, but But anyway, I've been waking up less often in a fearful state than I used to. I guess that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
However that works biochemically, neurologically, I have no idea.
Yeah, there's actually neurochemistry that's involved, but that's a whole nother show.
Oh, good. Now we have another topic.
Yeah, because it has to do with your cortisol level and your biorhythm. But, yeah, we should talk about that next week.
Coming up on next week's show, the biochemistry of the lizard within.
Stay tuned.
Okay, we've got about 2 or 3 minutes left because we actually ran a little bit long on the first segment, so we don't have quite as much time on this segment. Let's just do one last round robin here. Go around with one idea that you're going to try to practice over the next week in order to keep yourself in a positive state. And Mark, I'm going to call on you first. What's your one idea for keeping yourself in a positive state?
Well, definitely keep my morning gratitude list going. That's been helping me a lot. Also, what's been helping me is being vigilant for sliding into less than happy, content, confident feelings, which is the precursor to diving into fearful feelings. And when I recognize that, just saying to myself, oh, stop, no need to go there, everything's fine. And then, you know, think of something happy or great, something I'm grateful for or something like that. I think it's my main practice these days. It's working well.
So stay the course. Keep doing what you've been doing.
For me, yes.
Okay, that sounds good. Louise, what's your one thing that you're going to try to keep practicing this week?
Being aware of my surroundings and enjoying what, if I'm inside or I'm outside, what I'm seeing, feeling, hearing, tasting, touching, using all my senses to stay very present and enjoy just what is in my visual range.
Yes.
Okay, that's good. Yoana, how about you?
Yeah, I'm going to do exactly what Louise stated, and I'm also going to remember that fear is false evidence appearing real. So when I'm afraid, I'll remember that I'm actually making the false evidence appear real, and then I'll use that to imagine the best scenario.
That sounds good. For myself, I think I'm going to continue to use the Abraham Hicks meditation tapes that I've been using lately. I've been using them 2 or 3 times a day, and they have been probably the most effective tool I've used to keep the fear at bay. I can be in a fearful state, put the headphones on, and 15 to 30 minutes later, the fear is either gone or severely dissipated, and I'm back in control again. The lizard is at bay.
Yes.
And with that happy thought that the lizard is at bay, we're going to say thank you for doing this once again. It's always been fun when the four of us are doing this, and I'm glad we're doing it as a group now. Mark and Yoana, we'll see you again next week.
Yes, it was fun.
Thank you.
And Louise, it's been great as usual.
See you around.
Yep, we'll see you all next time as well here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. To you.